It was a hot breath in the upper yesterday, wasn't it? Yeah. I see my sunburn. Very, very warm. But very joyful. I was asked to speak, initially at least, and then some other topic, but initially speak about Brahmananda Prabhu. Some of you certainly know who Brahmananda Prabhu was, and some of you don't. So he recently left his body in Vrindavan, very, very dear disciple of Srila Prabhupada, and I'd like to speak some things about Brahmananda, kind of like a memorial or eulogy of Brahmananda. I'll speak from my perspective as a new devotee. I became a resident of the Boston Temple in 1970, and of course you know ISKCON was formally incorporated in 1966, so I wasn't part of that original batch of devotees. But when I joined in Boston, the temple president was Satsarupa, then Dasadikari, who was married, and he was amongst those original devotees in Boston. And we had this wonderful practice. One of the most attractive parts of taking prasadam together every day was not just the taking of prasadam together every day. It was this ritual that while taking prasadam, we would ask the older devotees who were assembled there to just tell Prabhupada stories. We didn't have Krishna book yet. We didn't have Chaitanya Charitamrita yet. Later on, we would read from those books while taking prasadam. But this was such a wonderful place where the devotees that were assembled, many were from that original batch of devotees that started at 26 Second Avenue or the earliest days of the Hare Krishna movement. And so they had lots of association with Prabhupada, and it was Prabhupada story time. It was better than anything. The prasadam was okay, but the Prabhupada katha was very, very wonderful. And a very prominent person in all of that katha was Brahmananda. So I'll share some of those things that I heard and understood about Brahmananda. But even before that, my first introduction to who Brahmananda was, I didn't know who he was, but it was 1969. I was visiting the Boston Temple with the intention, while I was in Boston from where I was doing undergraduate study, came with some friends. We came to Boston. I was looking for graduate school, medical school in Boston. So while there, I visited the Boston Temple. And this was not the present building, but it was Alston. It was a rented building. Like a three-story building, wood frame building. And packed up in that temple was what is now the BBT. At that time was ISKCON Press. ISKCON Press was not separately incorporated, it was part of ISKCON. And there was where all the book publication went on, including back to Godhead magazine and all the Prabhupada's books. It was all happening there. So that meant the editors, Jayadvaita Maharaj was there, Giriraj Maharaj was there, Bharat the artist, Muralidhar, Jadarani, and Prikshit were there, and Hridayananda Maharaj was there. You know, this was a cast of some amazing personalities that some of you may know just from your duration of life in ISKCON. It was a very, very wonderful temple. But why I went there had to do with had gone to the temple was an evening where Brahmananda had just come back from travel with Srila Prabhupada for some period of time. I get the sense of an extended period of time, a couple of months, something like that. I don't recall exactly how long. And because Brahmananda was known as a big devotee, and he was big in more ways than one. He was the first president before there was even, you know, the first time as the president named, he was named the president. Prabhupada established him that way. But so he was president because Prabhupada trusted him. When Prabhupada gave him some service, he could count on it happening in a quality way, because Brahmananda was very capable. And he was big in this sense too. He was large in body, he was tall and big. And I had met him before. It was my first visit to a formal ISKCON temple, other than where I was going to college. It was a small place, but it was really small place. Like a, you know, a college preaching center kind of place. So, because he had just been with Prabhupada for some period of time, a couple of months, as my memory says, devotees had come from all over because they were going to hear some Prabhupada stories. And devotees love to tell Prabhupada stories. So the kirtan was a kirtan where the devotees were bouncing off the ceiling of the wall. They were very, very enthusiastic. The kirtan was something I'd never experienced before. And then after the kirtan, everyone was, you know, really enlivened to hear Brahmananda. Brahmananda, they had this little lectern. It was smaller than that. And Brahmananda had this big body, so it was like cartoonish. Here's this huge body person sitting in front of this little tiny lectern, leaning forward and just radiating his joy at describing what he had been through in travels with Srila Prabhupada. And the part that sticks in my mind the most was his description of Prabhupada's negotiating a contract for printing Krishna book with Dainapan. And he was very graphic, because again, Brahmananda was an accomplished person, but he was just amazed at Prabhupada's finesse. So it was in Japan. Dainapan was a huge printing company in Japan. And these very business-like book publisher Japanese men dressed in business suits, and in comes Prabhupada wearing his dhoti with Brahmananda, and they were no match for Prabhupada. And I can't remember the detail, but you know, they were negotiating and Prabhupada was negotiating back and forth and back and forth, and Prabhupada essentially pulled a coup. He somehow, by his spiritual influence, not only got their name as the printing, but it was at a price that was practically, you know, at cost, because of the nature of what they were publishing, and Prabhupada convinced them to publish a large number of books at practically their printing cost, slightly above. And Prabhupada was very happy at the result, and Brahmananda was joyful, describing how skilled Prabhupada was, not only as a spiritual leader, but how attentive he was to details and effective he was in helping to bring Krishna consciousness into the world. Because previously there was the Bhagavad Gita that was printed by Macmillan, and they had all these requirements. They wanted an edited version of Prabhupada's full Bhagavad Gita as it is. So they edited it down, and Prabhupada didn't like it, but that was their terms, and so it was an edited Macmillan publication. He didn't go back to Macmillan because he didn't want the edited version, although they were amazed at how many copies were sold, because the devotees were so enthused to sell Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, even the edited version. But Prabhupada didn't want an edited version, and they weren't flexible, and so he went some other direction. So with Dainippan, it was an unedited Krishna book. So this was the summer. No, it was the spring semester of 1970. So that's when the contract, and then the book came out about a year later, Krishna book. So that was my first encounter, just with just this radiating, happy, joyful, you know, big devotee in many ways. And everybody very clearly looked up to him as a leader, because that was his nature. He was a leader. It was Brahmananda who, this is my understanding from what I heard from Sansur Maharaj, who led the devotees out on public Harinam in the streets. In fact, before there was the public Harinam in the streets, the regular program was 3 nights a week. It was Bhagavad Gita class at 26 Second Avenue, and it was kirtan. You've seen video, probably, of the kirtan at 26 Second Avenue. Prabhupada would speak, and then kirtan and prasadam. So Brahmananda came up with the idea and suggested to Prabhupada, this is so wonderful, why don't we go into the public and chant the holy name in the public. It was his suggestion. And then Prabhupada said, very good idea. Why don't you arrange a permit so we won't have any problem with the police? So he proceeded to make a permit at Tompkins Square Park, Brahmananda. Because he was the president, he knew how to get things done. So you know that famous event, the Tompkins Square Park, in fact, the elm tree under which Prabhupada sat that first time and then later subsequent times, has now a little memorial plaque indicating, you know, Prabhupada's there's a plaque dedicated to him. In fact, you may want to do this. Go to the Parks Department of this of New York City and look at 26 Second Avenue. Excuse me, look at Tompkins Square Park, and you'll find a little video of Allen Ginsberg being interviewed by, I forget the media person's name, and Allen Ginsberg speaking about the chanting of Hare Krishna on the New York City Parks Department page for Tompkins Square Park. Because of the chanting of Hare Krishna. That's their claim to fame, is the chanting of Hare Krishna in Tompkins Square Park. It's ours too, but it's theirs too. Because Prabhupada elevated that place to a pilgrimage place. Inspired by, of course, Prabhupada would have done this himself, but inspired by the encouragement of Brahmananda. Then there's this famous exchange, one of many, between Prabhupada and Brahmananda, where early in the morning, one of the regular activities that Prabhupada would do between 6 and 7 every morning, is he would go for a morning walk. And one time, a famous one, I heard this directly from Sansur Maharaj, many times actually, that it was Brahmananda, Kirtanananda, and Umapati were going for a walk with Prabhupada early one morning. And Brahmananda said to Prabhupada, how am I to remain humble? I'm getting all this recognition and title and position and appreciation from devotees. And I know a devotee isn't supposed to let this go to their head, but it goes to my head. And how am I supposed to remain humble? Prabhupada, please help me. So Prabhupada put his cane down on the sidewalk. Maybe Sansur Maharaj was there also. And said, in the vastness of the spiritual sky, there's a planet called Goloka Vrindavan. And Goloka Vrindavan is the largest of all the Vaikuntha planets. An expansion from Krishna, who is the presiding personality of Goloka Vrindavan, there are unlimited Vaikuntha planets presided over by Lord Narayana and his goddess of fortune, Lakshmi. And an expansion of Narayana are the Purusha avatars, one of which is Karana Dakshai Vishnu, who lies down in the Karana ocean, and from him expand unlimited numbers of universes. And in one of those, in each of those universes, there's unlimited, countless numbers of planets. And in one of those universes, where it has countless numbers of planets, there's one planet called Earth planet. And on that Earth planet, there's seven continents with billions of people. And one of those continents is called North Carolina, North America. And in North America, there's one country called the United States. And of those 50 United States, one of those states is called New York. And one of those states called New York, there's a city called New York City. And in New York City, there's millions of people in so many streets. And in one part of New York City is Manhattan. And one part of Manhattan, here's Brahmananda on Mott Street asking, how do I think of myself as insignificant? That's how you can remain humble. Brahmananda didn't forget that one. So aside from his leadership and the fact that he was a big devotee, trying to remain humble, a primary characteristic of Brahmananda was his profound love for Prabhupada. In those of you that are familiar with Nectar of Devotion, there are 64 items in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and the first of them was practically personified by Brahmananda. In general, Prabhupada instilled in his followers this principle. The Sanskrit term is Guru Padashraya, having taken shelter at the lotus feet of the spiritual master, the first principle. That was Brahmananda, through and through, inside, outside, and all around. He had many times later I heard Brahmananda speak, and invariably in speaking he would speak about Prabhupada, and almost always he would begin to tear up and become emotional when speaking about Prabhupada. It just was, his heart was so, although his body was so big and his responsibilities were so great and his capabilities were similar, his heart was so soft. When he thought of Prabhupada, he would, his voice would crack and he would have to get out a tissue. And just speaking about Prabhupada, I mean, many times, not sometimes, many times, his heart was like that. And here's an incident that's not so, it's a little infamous, but just to give you an idea. When Nectar of Devotion was printed, so my first encounter with Brahmananda was in the spring semester of 1970. In the summer of 1970, that was in relation to a printing contract with Dainapan. But Nectar of Devotion had been printed, and advance copies were given to some very special devotees. And four of them were, this is Janmashtami, 1970. Four of the leading disciples of Srila Prabhupada had just been awarded sannyas by Prabhupada. Brahmananda, Vishnujan, Subal, and Gargamuni. Gargamuni and Brahmananda were brothers, so they were given sannyas. They had advanced copies of Nectar of Devotion. So at that time, there weren't too many centers in ISKCON, 1970. So, but there was Radha Krishna deities in New Vrindavan, so It was a thing where the devotees would gather together for Janmashtami in New Vrindavan. And when these four newly anointed sannyasis, I mean, of the ripe age of maybe 23 or 24 or 25 or something like that, years of age, given sannyas, because they were, you know, very powerful leading personalities and Prabhupada wanted to spread Krishna consciousness, he gave them sannyas. And they came to New Vrindavan and read these principles found in Nectar Devotion, and they were taking statements from Nectar Devotion to declare, all four of them, to declare that Prabhupada was God. Now, in the early days, in 22nd Avenue, Prabhupada said very clearly, one who says that he is God, he is dog. Now they're saying, according to Prabhupada's teaching, exactly, he's God, and they recite this and that. And I was in Boston at the time. This was, you know, August 1970, the very day. The news came that Brahmananda, Gargamuni, Vishnujan, and Subal are preaching in New Vrindavan that Prabhupada is God. Well, the same day, Prabhupada was in India, and he heard, and he went ballistic. He said, these four are kicked out of ISKCON. He had just given them sannyas. They are not to preach in any of our centers, and if they wish to become rectified, each of them must go to a place where there is no center and start a Hare Krishna temple. But they're not to preach in any of our existing centers. So that's how Gainesville got started. Because Brahmananda went to Gainesville, Vishnujan went to Austin, UT Austin, Subal went to somewhere in New Mexico, Santa Fe, New Mexico, or something like that. So it was a shocker. I was this new box, and these are big devotees, and Prabhupada just kicked them out of ISKCON. He just gave them some yas. It was a shocker. And he's strong. Can't get much stronger than that. And they accepted it. They accepted the reprimand of their spiritual master in a contrite way. Their intention was to glorify Prabhupada. Brahmananda loved Prabhupada. Something that looks like he's God. He's God. You're kicked out of ISKCON. Okay. So let me remedy myself. And they did. Prabhupada accepted after, you know, some time. I don't even think it was a year. It was, if the plan was, you do this for a year and I'll consider. Prabhupada was very, as an acharya, he was very strong on Siddhanta. He didn't want anything to happen in terms of meddling with the Siddhanta, the teachings of Rupa Goswami, which he was representing and spreading in the world. They did so, this is my understanding, they did so innocently, foolishly, innocently, in glorification of Prabhupada, but wrongly. The Prophet didn't hesitate. It was the same day they kicked out. I am repeating it, but it was because it was such a shocking thing. So they went off and preached in established centers in those places. And then in turn, you know, Prabhupada would give Brahmananda different challenging services, like, you know, assisting him in, well, so many things. He was very good with money, as was his brother, Gargamuni. In fact, his brother was nicknamed Gargamuni. Affectionately, of course. And, you know, both he and Brahmananda were very good with finding funds and providing funds to help Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness. He took an assignment from Srila Prabhupada to go to Africa and spread Krishna consciousness in Africa. I was conferences in Hartford last Sunday, and Pyari Mohan shared an experience he had. I don't recall it, but I must have been there. It was in the Brooklyn Temple, because Pyari Mohan is also from Brooklyn, in case you didn't know that. By his accent, you can tell. And there was a situation in the Henry Street Temple in Brooklyn where Prabhupada was chanting Jai Radha Madhava, and then it sounded like he stopped, so everyone was paying obeisances, but Prabhupada continued playing the kartals. For some reason, he wanted the kirtan to continue. And so everyone looked around and joined the kirtan, and Brahmananda stood up and started dancing. Then everybody stood up and started dancing. Prabhupada was in a mood of wanting the kirtan to continue, and so he was going to assist Prabhupada in the mood of joyfully having the kirtan continue. And at the end, Prabhupada said, Brahmananda was the first to begin dancing. He was always the leader and was leading people even in dancing. Prabhupada had great love for Brahmananda, as Brahmananda had great love for Prabhupada. And he was something of an historian, that is to say, certain devotees, he being one of them, had intimate involvement with the early stages of Krishna consciousness. So when there was some question about what Prabhupada did, or what Prabhupada actually said, or what Prabhupada's intention was, because he was intimately engaged in his service, he would often be a person to go for those things, the go-to historian person. Because going forward in time, we would want to make sure we're keeping fidelity with Prabhupada's words and Prabhupada's intentions and, you know, the subtleties. And that close association was practically invaluable. So he was such a person. Not known as, you know, a deeply philosophical person, but a very practical person. Something in Jiva Goswami's writings, that when I read this, I thought of Brahmananda. Jiva Goswami says, bhakti is the mood of wanting to serve Krishna. And bhakti, in its latent state, in its seed-like state, is within the heart of everyone. Love of God is within the heart of every living being. This is Lord Chaitanya's teachings. Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sadhya Kabunoi. And how does it come out? Shravanadi, beginning with hearing. Shuddha Chitte, consciousness becomes purified. So, Jiva Goswami says, bhakti begins by the hearing and chanting process, by contacting bhaktas who are carrying bhakti, and they transmit their bhakti through sound. And when that sound touches the heart of another, bhakti awakens. And what's that bhakti? It's the desire to serve Krishna. It can be a little beginning desire to serve Krishna, instead of no Krishna in the picture at all, just being a servant as a person in the office or a mother or father or something, because we're all constitutionally servants, but specifically the desire to serve Krishna. That's bhakti. And Jiva Goswami says it starts in the heart, then it goes to the senses. So now that it's going to come a little philosophical section for this evening. Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 47. The final verse of the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You can say it together?
Yes.
Yoginam api sarvesham madhatenam tatatmanam Shraddhavan bhajate yoham samne yukta samodvataha.
Very nice verse. Preceding that, Krishna is advising Arjuna. Arjuna, I'm paraphrasing, Arjuna, you asked me what is your duty. Whatever you do, Arjuna, be engaged in yoga, linking with the Supreme. And in, of all the different systems of yoga, one amongst them all is the topmost. It's like this, the topmost yoga. The little booklet is Prabhupada speaking on chapter 6, Bhagavad Gita, topmost yoga. And specifically on this verse, is at its conclusion. So there's two parts of that topmost yoga. It's something that the mind does, and something that the senses do. The mind, madgatenantaratmana, the mind is fully absorbed in Krishna. Mud is a personal pronoun. It's in madgata, seeing Krishna as the goal or the value. Antaratma, fixed upon Krishna as the purpose and goal of life. And then Shraddhavan, with faith, bhajate yolam, engaging in devotional service to Krishna. And Prabhupada explains this word bhaj, bhajate is significant in this verse. It comes from the Sanskrit word bhaj, B-H-A-J, which is also the same root as bhakti. And the indication of bhaj or bhakti is practical activity, meaning not just a feeling, like some people think. Bhakti is a sentiment, it's for sentimentalists. You feel something, you feel towards something, you feel love for something, love for Krishna. No, it's not just a feeling, it's practical activity. Practical activity means there's the senses, and there's objects of the senses, and the senses engage in activities in relation to the object of the senses for the service of Krishna. It's practical. Jiva Goswami writes that bhakti, although it's within the heart, but it's also within the senses. So what's the implication of that? The senses are used in the service of the master of the senses. It's another definition of bhakti that's very familiar to many of you. Sarva upadi. Let me almost say it. Let's say it quickly. Sarva upadi vinirmuktam atparte nirmalam rishikena rishikesha sevanam bhaktir uttama. So now just break it down. There's sarva upadi. I know the verse. I'm just debating on how far to go into philosophy. The traditional thing that we commonly hear from followers of Prabhupada, what upadi means is designation. But there's a more technical term. It's something that's, it limits, it confines and limits. Anyway, it's material, confining and limiting. I mean, just for your, I'll go there for just a moment. Jiva Goswami says, there's a distinction, one of the distinctions between Bhagavan and Paramatma is that Paramatma has a limiting aspect, an upadi. Not like, you know, I'm American, you're Indian, these are women over here and men over here, this one's fat, that one's skinny. Not those kinds of, that's one kind of upadi that we're familiar with, the bodily identification kind. But it means something philosophically more than just that. The Purusha avatars, the forms of Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and Shiradakshay Vishnu, Paramatma, they're involved with material nature. Their function is in relation to creation. Question. In the spiritual world, that wonderful day comes and you go back to Godhead, is there going to be super soul within the heart at that point in time? No. Why not? Because Krishna is in front of you. And when you turn your attention away from Krishna, he doesn't turn his attention away from you. He manifests himself in the heart of every living entity that comes into this material world and provides the whole shebang, the whole material creation. And according to Jiva Goswami, that's an upadhi. Now, he's not identifying with the covering, because there's no covering. But it's upadhi in another sense than we're accustomed to use it. It's a philosophical, I find it interesting. And therefore, when reading or when looking at verses in the Bhagavatam, one needs to know which feature of the Supreme is being referred to. And in some cases, it's Bhagavan, very clearly. In some cases, it's Paramatma or the Purusha avatars, because they're in relation to creation. And Bhagavan expands himself as the Purusha avatars for that function. But for him, there's no upadhi. There's no limitation at all. Not at all. In one sense, they're the same. Krishna's within the heart. We say that. Krishna's in the heart of every living entity. But that's the Paramatma feature of Krishna. And then there's Krishna who's in Goloka Vrindavan. And there's no Paramatma feature in Goloka Vrindavan. No Mahavishnu, no Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Nada. It doesn't exist at all. When bhakti awakens, it... It delivers one from upadhis. Even we may still, in the sadhana stage, in the practicing stage, we may accept the philosophy, I'm not this body. But we live practically taking care of the needs of the body. We put it to rest at night, we give it some fuel to keep it running, and if it has a leak, we put a patch on it, and we do things to take care of the body. Although it's not who we are. And to the degree that bhakti becomes really strong, then one transcends even the demands of the body. Like the Midvaita associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they hardly ate or slept. Prabhupada described that about himself. In his final days, he said, I conquered the sleep, mating, and defending. Now what's left is eating. So he was just diminishing and diminishing and stopped eating. So one who was able to develop their bhakti so strongly, even the demands of the body, what to speak of not identifying with it. Is a consequence. So, bhakti goes into the senses, and then the senses extend into the field of prakriti or material nature for Krishna's service, and otherwise not, like the tortoise is described in Bhagavad Gita. For the purpose of service, the senses are extended, and if there isn't service, then the senses are withdrawn. The opportunity for service is how a devotee extends himself. So this, I'm now speaking of Brahmananda. He was so devoted. There were many others, so it's not like he's the only one that has this quality. But he had the quality that if he understood that Prabhupada wanted something, he would literally give his life for that something. His mind, his senses, his intelligence, his very practical sense of getting things done. I mean, there are others. Tamal Krishnamurti was well known. If it was Mission Impossible, he gave it to Tamal Krishnamurti to get it done. Anyway, it was like many times. Mission Impossible, give it to Tamal Krishnamurti to get it done. There are many examples. Purchasing of the Mayapur property. Many persons have tried, failed, He sent to Mahakrishnamurti, he got it done. He figured out how to do it, he got it. Very practical. Very practical. Sent him to China. Mission Impossible. He spread Krishna consciousness in China. Because I go to China, I meet the devotees who, you know, are the fruit of that initial preaching. And his strategy was fantastic. And it was very effective. You know, he knew how to get things done, and he got things done. Even at a time when the communist government was more, whatever you want to say, harsh and restrictive than today. They're harsh and restrictive today. They were more harsh and restrictive then. We still, that's just, my message here is that bhakti is practical. And Prabhupada was practical. Our great acharyas not only were super elevated, some were more like Gokishore Das Babaji, didn't involve himself with things of this world. But many of our great acharyas, a number of our great acharyas, were so practical in their bringing into the world bhakti and a life of devotion and facilities for a life of devotion, preservation of property. Jiva Goswami was amazing. You know, that's another time we'll speak about Jiva Goswami. This is about Brahmananda. He was like that. He intimately associated with Prabhupada. He had characteristics that Prabhupada saw. And he gave him responsibility after responsibility after responsibility and trained him how to be humble. Because when you receive the kind of positions, he was the first president. And everybody looked up to him in that way, the president and the big devotee. It can go to your head very easily. And Prabhupada taught him how to stay humble. The thickness of that relationship between our founder Acharya and a number of the leading devotees, Brahmananda being one of them, to the final days when his health was so bad that in his condition, you know, because you probably associated with him, at least saw him moving around here there in Vrindavan. They just wanted to vastly promote media that would bring Prabhupada into the world. They did some things that were even so good to do to bring media Prabhupada into the world. But that, you know, that was their drive. Give the world to the Prabhupada. Because that's what's going to, that was their devotion. I say they, that's he and Garbha Muni. One last thing I'll say is this. One of the first, if not amongst the first batch of those who were initiated, Brahmananda was one of them. And at one point in time, Brahmananda and Garbha Muni's mother attended some function. I don't know the detail. Maybe it was their initiation, maybe it was something else. In any case, when Prabhupada met Garbha Muni and Brahmananda's mother, he treated her. Prabhupada treated their mother with such affection that her heart melted. He had the capacity to melt people's hearts, and he melted her heart. And one of the things that he said, those of you from India, most of you are, you've heard this before, but she hadn't heard it before. She said, one can judge a tree by its fruit. So these two boys, one can understand their quality, the quality. From their quality, one can understand about your quality. Because a tree can be judged by its fruit. So she was upset that her sons hadn't become whatever they could become in worldly distinction. But at the same time, she loved Prabhupada. So she was okay. During the day today, there was at the Brooklyn Temple, there was a little ceremony in honor of Brahmananda. Some videos of his activity, you know, being part of a larger group. Then again, the 26 Second Avenue in the afternoon, some gathering. because he was, you know, the first president of 26 Second Avenue. In fact, as long as we had that place, he was the president. After that, they outgrew it, so they moved over to 61 Second Avenue, across the street and up on the second floor, and from there to the Brooklyn Temple, renting that space on Henry Street. But he was the leading person for all that time. So they had a ceremony for him in his honor in the afternoon, 11 o'clock. No, 1 o'clock until 3 o'clock at 26 Second Avenue. Now here, just some sharing about him.
Thank you.